Let's have an AA meeting.
Let's have one.
My name is Shay, and I'm an alcoholic.
Shay.
Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual, in our personal stories, describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Now, I'd like to introduce this evening's speaker, Karen.
Hi everybody, I'm Karen and I'm definitely an alcoholic. And I swear every time I get up here I'm not going to freak out, but if I do, just bear with me, because it's probably going to happen. And I was going to tell you how this all started for me, but first let me tell you, this is the way I used to think. 3,000, excuse me, scratch that. See, I'm not good at math either. 39,403 hours times 60. That's 2 million and change minutes times 60. That's, I don't know, a lot. It's a lot, trust me. That's how many seconds it's been since my last drink. That's how many times I thought about a drink before I came in these doors. Every second of every day. Can't swear. Okay. Problem number one. Oh, no, kidding. So, just first let me tell you, my sobriety date is February the 1st, 2013. I have an awesome sponsor who has a sponsor, and I sponsor women. Really, only about half of them ever call me, but I sponsor that half anyway. AA saved my life, and I didn't think I needed saving. Boy, was I wrong. First of all, we're supposed to tell what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So I made a cheat sheet. It's not that bad. Don't worry. I was born. See, that's what happened. No. My parents divorced when I was third grade. My dad was in the military. We traveled. We didn't have a lot of long-term friends because we moved, you know, basically every 18 months. And we had to fit in. So I was good at being a chameleon. I learned at an early age that in order to not be the odd person out, I had to be invisible or really obnoxiously loud. You can guess which one I chose. When my parents divorced, we moved back to my mother's hometown in a little teeny tiny town called Lincoln, Alabama. My grandparents, both sets, maternal and paternal, were farmers, and both their wives owned antique shops in their homes, and we spent summer with them, you know, a couple weeks every summer. So I had a great family, you know. Everybody loved everybody. Well, until my parents got divorced, but, you know. We moved back to Alabama. That's where my grandmother lived. My grandfather passed away. This is my mother's family. And there I discovered prejudices that I didn't know existed, like color, really. In the military, it's rank, baby. It's all rank. So I had a lot of unique challenges growing up. Nothing bad, you know, nothing that caused me to go out and drink. Just, well, you know, there was a bootlegger. Why not drink? My very first drink that I remember as a child was at a party that my parents were having. And I have no idea what it was, but it was a Christmas party, and I remember having a drink. And then we were sent to our rooms. And I didn't sleep for a little while. I played in my room a lot. And then when we moved back to Alabama, that lovely little feeling came again. We were at my aunt's house, and my aunt always liked to have these delicious, colorful little drinks. And I had a pink squirrel, a whole one, by myself. And after that, I was doing cartwheels in the living room. But beyond that, then I discovered that at 13, I got a car because my mom worked two jobs and I had to get around. So out in the country, it didn't matter whether you had a driver's license or not, you just drove. So I had a little car and it found its way to a bootlegger. Imagine that. 151 rum and orange juice was my first big girl drunk at 13. Ugh. Still tasted disgusting. But underage driving led to underage drinking, which led to all kinds of fun adventures for me. There was a little pub, bar, whatever you want to call it, nightclub. My grandmother had several names for it, none of which can be repeated, and she didn't swear. But it was called Friends. And for my 18th birthday, because 18 was the legal drinking age then, we went in to have a party and celebrate. And when they realized I was 18, they banned me for 3 years because I'd been going there since I was 16. And they figured that was probably a fair punishment. From there, I graduated high school and I went to college. I went to the college that my grandmother went to. Lots of rich tradition and history. Didn't last very long for me. I drunked my way out of college. I was first semester, probably 2.3, maybe. Second semester, 0.3. Zero, 0.03. Who knows? It was pretty bad. Anyway, instead of staying in college, I decided I was going to do the next best thing. I was going to get married. Yeah, I was going to get married and move to Atlanta because there was lots of things to do in Atlanta, like drinking. Lots of alcohol. I moved to Atlanta, got married to a sweet little boy who, unbeknownst to me, had been in rehab 4 times. Back in the day when Scared Straight was around, if any of you guys remember that. It was a long time ago. After 4 years of marriage and his parents begging me to divorce him because it was going to come to no end, I finally took him up on their suggestion and I divorced him. $42,000 in debt for a cocaine habit that I was totally oblivious to. Had no idea. I just thought he drank like a fish. 6 months later, scared to death to be alone in Atlanta. What do? Next best thing. I get married again. Plaintiff number two. 6 months later, because now, you know, I've picked another winner. More alcohol, more drugs. I finally drew the line at this. There used to be a place in Buckhead, Confetti, if any of you remember it. And we were all dancing and doing shots and having fun. And my current husband liked to do shots of tequila. Well, after a few, they don't usually stay down real well. So what does he do? He walks over to a table, picks up a glass, gets sick, puts it down on the table, comes back out on the dance floor. I'm done. Done. Completely. Totally gross. I'm out. Divorce him? Wow. Number two. 3 years later, I finally decided I was going to try dating again. It's kind of scary. We dated for 3 years. We were engaged for 2 years. We got married, and we had a wonderful life until I got worse. Someone asked me early on if I was a day drinker. I'm not a day drinker. Are you kidding me? That's only alcoholics that do that. Except, wait, Saturdays. I drank in the morning on Saturdays because we'd go to tennis and I'd watch. And who could go to tennis without a pitcher of margaritas or mimosas or Bloody Marys? So, yeah, I guess I was a day drinker. Boy, that really sucked because I didn't think I was one of those people. We had been married for 5 years. No babies. I wanted nothing more in the world than a baby because a baby would fix everything. No babies. 5 years into that, we decided we were going to give up and we were going to adopt. Fabulous. Wonderful. We went to see my brother who lived out of town. We had way too much to drink. Shortly thereafter, our debate was whether we called her Kettle One or Molson Golden. Fortunately, she was happy and healthy. She just decided to come a month early. I decided at that point I'd stay at home and be a stay-at-home mom, which is great because, you know, I was sober the whole time I was pregnant, right? Well, except when I got pregnant. But I was okay, so it was good. I was going to be a stay-at-home mom. It was going to be no problem. Well, that didn't work so well. And then she went to school, and she left me. Can you believe it? She went off and left me. So what do? I follow her to school, because not only am I completely out of control, I'm neurotic, and she can't be there without me, because I can fix everything. So I followed her to school, and I'll tell you more about that later. But then life happened, and when she was in ninth grade, I started having what I affectionately refer to as brownouts. You know, in California and up north, when they use too much electricity, everything kind of browns out and there's like not full. That was me. I was not fully charged. I was having brownouts. I wasn't blacking out because only alcoholics did that. Well, a few years later, I was doing that. Those years were the hardest for my daughter. She quit bringing friends home. She didn't have any afterlife, after school activities or anything like that, other than what she could make sure that I couldn't bring alcohol to. She played basketball. I was the most obnoxious parent there. Imagine that. Screaming and yelling. Had no clue about basketball. I still don't know a lot about basketball, but don't you hurt my baby girl, because I will be all over you like stink on. Anyway. I was really out of control. Those last 4 years, completely and totally out of control. Senior year, father-daughter dance. It was a small Catholic school. Big deal for fathers and daughters to go to the dance together. It was their last one, because she was going to go off to college. She was going to leave me again. I decided that it was going to be fine. I was just going to have a cocktail or two. No problem, it'd be fine. Well, earlier in the week, a friend of mine had invited me to go as her guest to an event for the Archdiocese of Atlanta, which is, you know, means it's a big deal, and I have to behave, because it's a church thing, right? So I decided, okay, I can do this. I'll go. So Tom and Emily get ready to go to father-daughter dance, and I've only had maybe one drink at that point, so I'm pretty good. And they leave, and I say, okay, it's time to get ready. So I go upstairs. You know what a Tervis tumbler is, right? Big sucker. And I fill it with vodka, and I think I got the orange juice bottle near it, but I'm not real sure. Kind of baptized it, maybe. I don't know. And I had a drink. And I took a shower, and I had another one. Another Tervis tumbler. Decided I was going to figure out what I was going to wear. Oh, God, the glass is empty. What do I need? Another Tervis tumbler. So now I'm at three. I get one ready for the car, because I'm going to drive myself, because I'm a grizzled veteran at drinking and driving. In fact, I didn't go anywhere if I didn't have a cocktail. I filled the drink up, and I got about halfway between Roswell and the Perimeter Mall, and it was empty. So I pulled into a package store, and I got five minis, maybe six, five for sure. And I filled up the Tervis tumbler, and I had two left. So I put them in my purse. Got to the event. Oh, hello. Whew, a little nervous there. Got to the event, and guess what? It was empty again. So I don't want anybody to know how much I've been drinking. So like any good alcoholic, I go in, and I belly up to the bar, and I order a martini. Because, you know, I'm civilized. I'm going to have a martini. And then I had a second. We sat down for dinner. The salad came. I had a glass of wine, like I needed something else. And then I woke up in the bathroom. I had voided everything out of every orifice in my body. My clothes were in a plastic bag because my friends who were there, and it was their special night, were in the bathroom helping me. My glasses were broken. My shoes, I was so ticked. I had just bought a brand new pair of shoes, because really, what alcoholic doesn't need a new pair of shoes every day, for $200 that I didn't have, and I'd thrown up on them, and various and sundry other things. So she threw them away. I was mad at her. Can you imagine the nerve of her? She's helping me in the bathroom, and she's throwing my shoes away? Oh, please. My necklace broke. My dress, total trash. My coat, it wasn't on me, so it was clean. So I wrapped up in my coat, nothing else, because everything else was still really disgusting. She drove me home, and I yelled at her the whole time, because I was hungry. and I wanted another cocktail. We passed Waffle House, my favorite place. I told her, let's go in. Just order scrambled cheese. Come on, that's all. She goes, honey, you don't have any clothes. I was like, so? Nobody's going to be looking. Really? Hello. They'd have been throwing up with me. Needless to say, no food. Got home, and she walked me in the door. I sat down in the chair, hit the remote, because, you know, nothing else was wrong. I had on my coat. It was fine. And I said, you know, maybe I'll have a cocktail. She goes, no, honey, you really should go upstairs and get cleaned up before your family gets home, because they hadn't gotten home yet. I went upstairs, and I did what she said. I stood in the shower, and I hosed off. No soap, no nothing. 4 o'clock in the morning. Oh, God. Anyway, the good thing is that at some point in time, about 6 months prior to that, I had gotten mad at my husband for something I have no idea about, and I was sleeping in the guest room. So they wouldn't know that I had been sick because, you know, I was sleeping in there. Most nights I didn't even know I made it to bed. Most nights I didn't make it to bed. So needless to say, that was the highlight of my drinking career. 4 o'clock in the morning, I wake up. The smell was so disgusting. I was shaking. I was scared. I had no idea where my purse was. I knew that I needed to find my phone, and I needed to get help. Thank goodness my sweet husband has a great setup where he worked, and they had an employee assistance program. And I called, and I talked to some poor slob for maybe an hour, hour and a half, scared to death, had my moment of clarity, knew that if I didn't do something now, I was going to die. My health was getting horrible. But, you know, it was menopause, right? No, it was not menopause. It was DTs, for God's sake. So, needless to say, thank God I had that moment of clarity, and I got help. The next morning, it was a Saturday night. The next morning, my daughter comes into the room. She goes, Mom, you going to get up and go to church? I was like, honey, Mommy's going to go to rehab. And she goes, oh, good. When do you leave? Really, if that's not enough, you need to go, then go. I had great support from my husband and our daughter until I tried to make my amends to my husband, which, by the way, get a competent sponsor before you start making amends. Listen to them. They know what they're talking about. I went to rehab. I was fortunate enough that I could continue working, and I went to a nighttime rehab. I was there Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday nights. I got off work at 5, went to rehab at 6. I was there until 9 o'clock at night, and then every Saturday from 8 in the morning until noon. And it was really a good thing that I did, because if I had had any time to myself, I'd have been drinking again. I needed to be separated from alcohol. I could not have done it on my own. There's no way. I admire people who can come in these rooms and find the support they need, and it's phenomenal. Somebody said to me one time about being, oh, you only got one chip. I was like, good Lord, if I had come in here when I should have, I'd have about 8,000 white chips, because I never could have done it until I was ready. And that basically is what happened. What it's like now, it's amazing. I can't even begin to. I'll tell you what, I'll look at my cheat sheet. Page 59. On page 59 of the big book, it talks about, imagine that. Rarely have you seen it. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point, and that's where I was. I was totally at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. I didn't know that I needed God. I had religion. Really? I went to church on Sundays. Surely I didn't need God. I had God. I had no clue. I had ritual. I had things that I was supposed to do, all of which I still love and enjoy. Don't get me wrong. I go to church all the time. That has nothing to do with this. What this is about is spirituality. And I thought I had it, and I had no clue. Step one says, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives had become unmanageable. Well, I could definitely do a big check on that one, because I was completely powerless over alcohol. It had me right by, we just wanted it. It was not pretty. And my life had totally become unmanageable. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. That, for me, was hope. because I didn't think anything could help me. Nothing. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Well, I didn't think I could do that either.
Really?
Because, you know, I'm so used to controlling everything. Until my sponsor pointed out to me, how's that working out for you? Not real well. Yeah, not real well. We made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. That was going to be kind of unique because all I did was lie. I lied to myself. I lied to my family. I lied to my employer. I didn't know what the truth was. I had no idea. So, I got a competent sponsor. She walked me through it. She told me how to do it. She begged me to be thorough, 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 and not to be afraid of anything. So I said, okay, I'll try this. Then we sat down and we talked about it. Oh, wow. I had to tell her everything. Really? Everything? Are you sure? Yeah. She put me at ease, though, because when I was really having a difficult time telling her something, she told me the story, and I just started laughing, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I didn't do that. Okay, we're good. But then I had to tell her the rest of it, so it was kind of uncomfortable. But that was okay, because as soon as I did, I felt like this weight was lifted off of my shoulders. I didn't even know I had this weight on my shoulders. I didn't know I was walking around with all this stuff sitting here, making me crazy. I thought I was the sanest, hardest working person you'd ever want to meet. Oh, dear Lord. So far from it. So far from it. So we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being. That was my sponsor, the exact nature of our wrongs. It was amazing. 6, entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Well, in doing that 5th step, I found out that, I got a lot of defects of character. You know, there's a list in a book that's not approved by AA, so I won't mention it, but I'll tell you afterwards if you want to know. And it has defects and assets. Check, 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 check. I mean, it was insane how many times I was checking those things off the list. So she told me, if you don't think you can get rid of them, if you don't think God can take them, you just live your life as if it's already happened. I'll live my life as if it's already happened. What are you doing? Crazy. But I decided I'd try. And sure enough, those things were kind of gone until one day. My husband had retired from his job and had started working at the school where I worked, which was the school where our daughter worked. I went to school, poor kid. She was sick with both of us. We were driving home. And, you know, I was really just every day bamboozling him with how awesome I was doing, you know. I'm not spending any money. You lie. I'm buying my stuff at Goodwill. Lie. All these wonderful things that I'm doing because now I'm a changed person, right? Lie. 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 So we're driving home, and I looked at my shoe because I'm in the car, got my foot crossed over, and my shoe has a hole in the bottom of it. So I said, I need to go buy some new shoes because I'm going to reward myself because I've been doing so good, right? He goes, why don't you go to Goodwill and get them where you say you buy all your other stuff? I was mortified. I was sobbing. I can't believe you said that to me. I'm trying so hard. I'm doing such a good job. It was awful. I had completely lost my mind. Completely and totally lost my mind. So, we're driving. Our daughter's sitting there tapping him on the back going, shut up. Daddy, you're only making it worse.
Well, she buys everything she says.
It was awful. Poor guy. Anyway, so then he decides that we're going to go to Kroger. Now, I'm snot bubbling, crying so hard. And he wants to go to Kroger to buy groceries for dinner because I'm going to have to go with what? So we go in. Because I'm not going to let him get me down. You know. And we go to the grocery store and we leave. We get our stuff. I'm kind of collected. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know what? I really should have my butt in a meeting because this is not going the way it should. And I need to do whatever I can to get back on track because I'm losing it. Didn't really think much else. We got home. They get out of the car. I hop in the driver's seat and I said, you know what, I'm going to a meeting.
It's like, it's probably a good idea.
Really? You want to kick a sister when she's down? But it was a good thing he did, because I cried a little more, which is really not smart to do while you're driving, sober or not. And I drove to the meeting. About halfway there, I thought, oh, you know, I'm being really selfish. I need to let him know I'm okay and that I'm not in a bar drinking. So I pull over and I text him because I don't want to call him because, you know, that means I have to talk to him. I am married to him. I don't want to talk to him, too. So I texted him. My daughter texts back right away. She's like, thanks. I'm glad you're okay. We'll see you when you get home. He texts, okay. But I do love him. He's awesome. And then I got ready to leave, and I look up, and the sign that I'm parked right by is the Woodstock Liquor Depot. It is the biggest liquor store in all of Cherokee County. I've been there a bunch. I know. Trust me. I could have cared less. It didn't matter. In fact, I was like, oh, that's ironic. And then I realized I'd had my very own AA miracle. Because there was no desire to drink. I wasn't even remotely tempted. In fact, I thought, wow, I just saved a lot of money. Because I'm not going in there. And I got to the meeting. And I was still kind of blown away by the fact that that was the one thing that I thought would never be removed from me. Because I thought I'd always want to drink. I'd always wanted to drink. But I didn't. And it was so cool. It was so cool. So, of course, I'm still new, and I'm still really excited about everything. So I go home, and I tell my husband, and I tell my daughter, and my daughter's really excited, except that she's tired because I just woke her up. And my husband is like, okay, you know, it's okay. He doesn't get it. And it really was okay, and he didn't have to get it because, really, it's not his problem. He put up with more than, well, those of you that have spouses and loved ones that put up with us, you know what I'm talking about. I don't need to tell you anything. He's awesome. I also thought he was the one that would be here, not me. Sorry, dog. But no, he can stop whenever he wants. And it just, it's amazing to me that that actually happened and that he hadn't divorced me yet. Because try as I might, I'm so far from perfect. I'm not even really working on progress some days. Some days it's like, what? But I try. Then we got to step 8, and I started making amends. Nope, big lie. Step 8 was the list, right? Step 8's the list. The good thing was is it had already been made in step 5, and my sponsor had written it down for me. And then we started step 9. Step 9 was where I really thought I was probably going to end up killing him. Because I went and told him how good I was doing. And that I was really, really sorry because I had been so bad and caused him lots of trouble. And, you know, all the things you shouldn't do and all the things that... And he was my first amends. Wrong answer. So his response to me was, we'll see. Huh? I just bared my soul to you, and we'll see. Because, honey, I've heard it all before. Mm-hmm. And he had. Numerous times. Hundreds, if not thousands of times. And I made a few other amends. Two of which I made at a cemetery. Because they needed to be made. And the funny part was that the two people were about, I don't know, from there to there apart from each other, so I kept walking back and forth. Got ready to leave, and the guy at the cemetery says, AA? Yeah, he goes, see it all the time. Which was pretty cool. In fact, I saw him again the other day, and I didn't say anything to him, but I looked at him and was like, God, the things you must see out here, buddy. It's crazy. So I, one of my amends at the cemetery was plaintiff number 1, who died from this disease. My next tough amends was to plaintiff number two. About 6 years prior, he had tried to reach out to me and take his call. Didn't want to talk to him. Screwed up my life. Really? Really? You threw up in a glass and put it on a table. You want to... holier than that. Yeah, right. What I didn't know was he was trying to make his amends to me. He has probably 20 years in the program now. Has a wonderful wife. He works in recovery. He's one of those that gets to do this every day and loves it. That was an amazing amends. Again, it's not bubbly. You're seeing a theme here, right? But it was amazing. I made amends to my friend who I ruined her night. That one I kind of held her hostage to do, though, because she didn't want to do it. She didn't want to hear my amends. It was too embarrassing for her. Of course, being every good alcoholic that I am, I decided she had to hear them. One of those things that I didn't discuss with my sponsor first. So we had gone, good grief, we had gone out of town for a work event, and she and I had shared a room, and one morning we got up and we were getting ready to leave, and she was over making up her bed, and I thought, ha ha, she can't leave. I'm going to tell her my events right now. So I was like, Kel, I need to talk to you. This is vital for my sobriety. And she goes, I'm not listening. I'm like, well, why? Why won't you just listen? She goes, I can't do this. This is too emotional. I can't do this. I was like, well, you're going to listen. So she crawls over her bed. So I back up to the door. Because I'm going to hold her hostage and give her my amends, right? Needless to say, she heard him. Oh, did she ever? And then she told me what a piece of work I was for making her relive that again. She just wanted to forget it. And I should have left. But I didn't. I held her hostage. Competent sponsor here. You need one. Trust me. And so, you know, I just kind of went along. I finally got the courage to do the amends for my daughter. And I told her I wanted to do this. And she said, okay. So we decided we were going to go to a coffee shop. Because there's a little coffee shop up the street. I don't know why we couldn't do it at home. But we were going to go to a coffee shop. Well, guess what? Coffee shop was closed. So we decided we'd go down to another little place. Got there, closed. I'm like, okay, God, really? Because I really need to do this. So we decided we were going to go to the, ready for this, Kroger Shopping Center. I don't know why Kroger is in my life like this. It's crazy. And we sit in the parking lot, and I make my amends to her. And guess what? It's not bubbling. It was the most horrifying and liberating thing I've ever done. Even more than my fifth step. It was amazingly liberating. I just can't explain it. I asked her at the end, I said, I hope I haven't forgotten anything, but if I have, please tell me. And is there anything you'd like to tell me? And she said, I'm just glad I have my mommy back. I didn't know I had gone, but I had. I'd been gone for a long time. I'm not going to stop. Okay. They've been my biggest supporters. There are days that I still do crazy stuff. There are days that I still really need to work this program a whole lot harder than I am. There are days that I see miracles that I never would have had a chance to see. This Saturday, our daughter's going to graduate from college. As soon as she graduates from college, we're having a small gathering, and her fiancé, boyfriend now, fiancé then, is going to propose to her. And I get to see that. I get to be present. There's so many things in this life that I get to do that I would not have had a chance to do had it not been for this program. Had it not been for the people in these rooms that love me until I could get my act together enough to love myself. That called my bull sorry, called my bullshit on a daily basis sometimes. I'm connected to my higher power in a way I never thought was possible. Be driving down the road talking to God, because that's what I call my higher power. And people look over at me and they're like, me and God, we're just chatting. It's okay. It's all good. Conversations, constant contact with my higher power. It's amazing. It blows my mind. I know that I was told early on that I didn't listen to, I'm sure. I know I didn't. That if I wanted to stay sober, I couldn't keep this. I had to give away what was so freely given to me. I was told when someone in AA asks you to do something, you do it. Whether you get at it or not, you just get up and you do it. That you got to get a sponsor, and then you got to be a sponsor. And if you don't, you're stealing. And I'm done stealing. I'm done robbing from people that I love. I'm grateful that I got to be of service when my father passed away when I was a year sober. I'm grateful that just this past June when my mother-in-law passed away, I was able to be of service and not be just the drunken daughter-in-law causing all kinds of problems. I'm grateful that I have a family outside of my own blood family. I have you guys, and it's such a blessing. I'm just thrilled that I get to be present in the lives of the people that I love. And I get to do this because I do His will, not mine. And that's the difference. And I'm so grateful for this program. And I think I'm going to start snot bubbling. So I'm going to stop here. But all I can tell you is that my name is Karen and I am an alcoholic. And I'm so grateful for these rooms.
I think I snot bubbled somewhere in there. Thank you, Karen. I love how you got rid of plaintiff number two because he could not throw up like a gentleman. I get it. I understand. I love it. And how much the program has worked in your life and what life still happens. You adequately showed how life still happens, but you're able to be there for it. And you're grateful for it. Thank you for telling us your story.
While others living high, a big piece of the pie, so many they got it wrong. As for me, when I wanted too much, ain't never enough. I know how it is to live and die, always fearing that I'm gonna run out. Keep the good stuff to myself, hide it from everyone else, save it for a rainy day.
It'll never leave if I give it and just don't take it. If you want love all the time, give it.